Good morning, everybody. This is the Home Care, Hospice, and Palliative Care Advisory Council, and we are ready to call the meeting to order. First item on the agenda, and I'm moving forward because I hear we have conflicts and we have to move efficiently today. First item is roll call.
Karen Belver.
Here.
Amy Ballard.
Here.
Ryan Bell. Brianna Dominguez. Lola Edwards.
Here.
Michelle Fox.
Here.
Jan Slater.
Here.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is approval of the meeting minutes. And you have those meeting minutes were emailed, and I'm betting that we have them in our packet here as well. So if we have reviewed those minutes, then...
I make a motion to approve.
A second.
So motion by Jan, second by Lola. Is there any discussion? All right, we'll call the vote.
Okay, Karen Belver?
Yes.
Amy Ballard?
Yes.
Lola Edwards?
Yes.
Michelle Fox?
Yes.
Jan Slater?
Yes.
Next agenda item is reports, and Nurse Aid Registry is first.
Good morning, everybody. I will try to keep this moving fast. I'm not going to read all of the numbers to you, but you do have the Nurse Aid and Home Care Administrator Registry counts in your packet. So you'll see total counts on the registry with our home care administrators and our our home care aides and our long-term care aides total. Our last quarter was 56,405. Remember, those are certification counts, not individuals, so the actual individual number is less than the certification number. We had 1,322 aides added to the registry in the third quarter by reciprocity. New certification counts that come to us through the training program. You see we added just over 1,000 long-term care, and we hold pretty steady with our home health aides at 677 for a total of 1,682. This was something we added at the request of the council, which was how many aides come to be on the registry by training exception or training waiver. The waivers are a little harder for us to count, so I'm putting some metrics is in place to be able to obtain that information. But as far as training exceptions go, we had one long-term care training exception. We had three waivers. Now remember, the waivers don't test. They just get added straight to the registry because they are a graduate of an LPN program or an RN program waiting for certification. So they can get on our registry. That's typically how that happens, is they're waiting to test for their certification. We had five CMA training exceptions, and we've had no training waivers for third quarter. Our retest counts, third quarter, we had seven long-term care, one home health, seven CMA for a total of 15. Now, these are not applications. These are how many aides were added to the registry. I do want to clarify that these are not, we have many more applications than that, but I only want to provide you what actually gets put on the registry from that. If you would like the other, I can do that, but this is how many certifications were added by retest.
It seems like the numbers are up from where they were a year or so ago. Are we anywhere close to where we need to be to meet the market needs?
That I can't answer for you. Nope. Mm-hmm. I don't have any statistical data on market needs, only how many counts, what's on the actual registry.
Probably the people in the market, are you finding the folks you need?
No.
You still
absolutely
still need,
not. Yeah.
Okay. I do want to remind you that 1,300 came to us by reciprocity. Mm-hmm. many of those do not live in the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
They will obtain those additional certifications because that is more money for them. If they can say, look, I'm certified in 17 states, it works on their resume. They do not have to pay for long-term care reciprocity in the state of Oklahoma. So it is a 10-minute application on their end. Once it's processed through our office, they're added to the registry, and it's little to no work on their end to be added to our registry. What we do see, though, of course, is those then fall off in 2 years because they don't renew. And this became a much more significant number through COVID. So as we're working through those 2 years, as those are rolling off, you'll
see them fall off.
You may see the count, the overall total count of aides on the certifications on the registry. We may see that start to come back down as we roll through the next year or two because those are falling off. But it, as you can see, the reciprocity numbers are not changing significantly. We're still processing over 1,000 a quarter, which is a lot of folks to put on the registry.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, on the back side of your form today, these are our approved training programs. And I can tell you this was third quarter numbers, which is January, February, and March. We are actually pushing almost or over 400 training programs all together with all of our training types. So we actually have a couple of more of the long-term care. You'll see that on the next meeting. We have 168 long-term care, 44 deeming. Stacy has is coming to the end of that initial 2-year certification. So remember when I told you that we had to make adjustments to the deeming, kind of correcting some programs? This is going to even out, and what you see is what we have that has all been rectified. On-site surveys. For the last quarter, she did 19 long-term care, 5 home health deeming for a total of 24. On the abuse, I have struggled with the best way to give you this information, and I've picked a method and I'm going with it. So you're going to see an asterisk on that. What happens is when we receive complaints on a nurse aide, those have to be vetted through either Dawn's team or long-term care to ensure that there may not be an issue on the agency side, or there may be an issue on the facility side if it's a long-term care aide. Once all of that gets done on that level, then it goes to legal for investigation. Those have different time frames, and so when somebody ends up on the abuse registry, sometimes it is very quick after that incident occurs. Sometimes there's a lag in time for many different reasons. So what I'm going to start doing is, I have an asterisk here because these numbers may adjust backward in time, meaning the way that I'm going to present this to you is the quarter in which a number falls is the quarter that the abuse allegation happened. That is when it took place. It can be substantiated 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road. And so I have a hard time capturing that for you. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, the number that is here may change backward in time, but it's because that has been substantiated, and I will add it and update it at that time.
So it'll be added to the quarter in which it occurred as opposed to the quarter in which it was substantiated.
Okay.
And that's what's changed from the other quarters, is that right?
So what I actually went back and changed some of the numbers. So if you compare this to the data that you have previously, mm-hmm. you're going to see those numbers a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I've gone back and done that. Now, it is at the pleasure of the board. If you would rather me do them in the quarter that they're, how many are substantiated in the quarter, I can do that versus this method. It doesn't make me any difference. But I feel like that way it gives you a true representation of when it happened.
Of the complaints.
You can say, right, like in this quarter, these were the number that occurred that were substantiated, regardless of when they were substantiated.
So they were substantiated.
These, yes. The
these aren't just the complaints that come in, but
that is correct.
Once they complain and then substantiated.
This is substantiated. The number just falls in the quarter in which the incident happened.
As long as we know the definition.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. That's what
that
I think
okay?
is important.
Yeah.
So we don't have an, and nobody has an opinion other than do it the same
you know, it'd
way
be helpful to know how many complaints compared
thinking.
To how many are substantiated.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And
is there some way to know that?
There is. I can tell you for every, and I'll provide you the data, but I can tell you for every one that's substantiated, there's 30 to 40 that are not.
That are
it's
not
significant.
Right.
It's very high. Very
so
very
someone
high.
Has to investigate all of those to
yes.
substantiate or not substantiate.
Yes, ma'am.
And who does that investigation?
Our legal department.
You're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because they're the administrative arm of our agency.
Mm-hmm.
So when an aide has a complaint and there is sufficient evidence, they go before our administrative law judge and have to go through that process. And then also remember that this is just the administrative side of it. They also can face criminal charges for anything that happens should the outside DA police department, that sort of thing, choose to bring charges against an individual, so they can have both criminal and end up on our abuse registry by way of the administrative law judge.
Now, if somebody gets on the registry, I heard this a while back, so after 5 years, they can appeal to get taken off. Is that true?
That is not true,
so
and I apologize for the water. I'm trying not to keep the allergies at bay.
That's okay.
Our regulation allows that once you are on the abuse registry, that is a lifetime barrier, with the exception of Lola neglect. The regulation allows for an individual who has a neglect charge that added them to the registry to make appeal after 1 year. They do have to, there's several things that, boxes they have to check that essentially clears. They have to prove they haven't been in trouble. There's several things they have to do. They have to go back before the administrative law judge and plead their case. And then they may or may not have that substantiated abuse charge revoked. That is the only one out of
everything that's
because you see, we have misappropriation, neglect, abuse, mistreatment, exploitation. Neglect is the only one that has that, and it is after 1 year. All other charges are lifetime banishments to the abuse registry where they cannot work.
So to substantiate a claim, you'd have to have some evidence other than the claimant's statements, I'm guessing. Something to prove, that is it.
Like a witness?
Yes.
So there is. So if you all make a complaint, if somebody from your agency, you know, makes a complaint against an aide, and, you know, Lindsay said we send it to legal, one of the things that we ask the agency for, you know, along with the form, the abuse form, we ask them for the agency's full investigation. If there was a police report, we ask for that. We ask for a synopsis, things of that. We want the full report so we can give everything to legal so they will have everything they need.
Mm-hmm. So would the complaint come from the agency or from a patient or patient's family?
It can come from either.
From anywhere.
Yeah.
So I would assume there has to be some kind of proof.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you would not be able to substantiate.
Correct. We have, often there are video evidence.
Yeah.
You'll have the families, let's say in a long-term care facility or even in a home care setting where they may have the video cameras inside. We get that, I'd say quite a bit, but frequently as evidence. You'll have, especially when it comes to money, misappropriation of funds, checks, credit cards. You know, they're going to go and pull statements from the business where they can prove that they were supposed to go buy, you know, diapers for the patient, and yet they have also bought a whole new set of makeup.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's things like that. So it all does have to be proven to be substantiated. So that's how that works. So as you can see, that's why the second quarter and third quarter numbers are somewhat, I say, significantly less than the others, is because they are substantiating substantiating fourth quarter of last year, first quarter of this year. Remember, we're doing on state fiscal year there, so you're doing July through June. So those are getting substantiated right now, which is why those numbers are going to be higher than what you see in this moment.
Sure. Yeah. Going forward.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So can we assume that if they face criminal charges, they're on this list? It also, does that mean, or is it just when the internal legal department substantiates it?
So that is where there is a gap in the system, if you will, between criminal charges and administrative law judge charges here. Sometimes they cross over, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're on one side, but not the other. So that's why we always ask, if you hear something, please tell us. That's a news story, that's right. Things like that, because they don't always overlap.
So if we hear about the criminal investigation results, those are things we should pass on to Dawn and her team.
I would recommend that you reach out to Nurse Aid Registry.
Okay.
because that's something that we can just make legal aware of, and then if it's something that they already have, they can add that, or it's something that they can then go and investigate. That is,
so
there's not a connection between the two right now.
That's useful information for you, though.
Always.
Yep.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. There's a significant amount of time, especially when the complaint comes from the agency or on behalf of the facility, that, as Dawn said, there's going to be notification to local law enforcement, that sort of thing. So where that gap occurs most often is when that complaint is made not on behalf of the agency or the facility, but by an individual. That's where it doesn't always cross over, because they didn't notify the police or something like that. Okay. So.
Okay. So we don't ever know of this, how many are really lead to criminal
prosecution.
There's not a crosswalk.
I wouldn't be, I mean, other than going out and obtaining the public information, like on OSCN, on the individuals we know, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't know that. You wouldn't have access to that.
We don't look for that in your investigation.
Right.
We don't.
Okay.
And
I pass that off. And
correct. Correct. Other questions about these? Okay. So I'm okay to continue to provide it this way.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for describing it.
On the home care administrators, we had 11 that certified by passing the OCAPA in the third quarter. We had 5 provisionals, 13 deeming, 6 renewals. Are a little surprisingly, when I pulled up those 6, I was thinking they would be overachiever earliers. No, there are late. They're late from last year. One of those 6 is an early. The other 5 are late. And we currently have 625 active certifications. We are coming into renewals for July 31st, so that will go up exponentially. And then test results, you're going to see we had 31 attempts. You all did not get this information from last meeting, if I remember correct.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
you actually have the last 2 quarters on here is the data that you have not seen. So from we had 30 in quarter 2, 31 in quarter three. We had 13 pass in second quarter, 12 pass in third quarter, and then 12 and 9 on passing for first attempts on the OCAPA exam.
That must be a tough exam.
So can I ask a question about this?
Ma'am.
So if there were, for example, 31 test attempts and 12 total passed, does that mean that the remainder of them, the other 16 or whatever it is, 15, that they took it three times and never passed, or maybe they haven't taken it the second or third time yet?
All of the above.
All of the above. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I tried, I think in past meetings, I had given you first attempts. Like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I found out that was incredibly difficult to track,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I was fearful of not providing accurate information.
Mm-hmm.
So I can tell without any question who takes the exam for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That is easy, and it's not even a matter of being difficult. It's just I'm afraid I'm going to provide you inaccurate information, and I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to providing you first times and total numbers who have passed. And remember, that's going to encompass preparedness programs, deeming, and provisional.
Mm-hmm.
All of our test takers. But you can assume that if they did not pass the first time, they may be in their second and third attempts. They may have tested out and mm-hmm. are no longer able to, or
mm-hmm.
So it would be all of the above.
Okay. Okay. I just wondered too. So we can't really draw a straight line between 31 people took the test and only half of them ever passed.
Correct.
Okay.
How useful is that? Would the information be for you to know how many times they've attempted? I mean, you're just interested if they passed and have the registration.
I just want them to pass.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know never are they always going to pass.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'd be the most interested in, just thinking from the perspective of teaching the class, is what is it that's causing them not to pass? And I know there are a lot of like very tricky questions on the test.
So I would also, if this is helpful information for you, I can tell you the majority of individuals who fail all the exam attempts are not preparedness program individuals.
They're deemed or
they are deemed
right,
or provisional.
They didn't go to the
so
that would
so whether
yeah.
that is
gotcha.
Helpful or not, I can tell you that the majority
it makes me
of those,
feel a little bit better.
Right. I can tell you the majority of those who are not passing repeatedly
uh-huh.
are individuals who did not take a prepared because
take.
What happens is I will get the three failed attempts as a provisional or dean, and then they have to go back and go through the preparedness
I've
program.
Had several students in that situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, while I, again, could try to provide you the data, it's very difficult. Because the other thing is, I'm doing this by quarter,
mm-hmm.
so I have... I may have a deeming applicant. The regulation requires that they sit for that exam for the first time within 3 months. Deeming does not give them an end cap on when they can take it. So I have individuals who may have applied for that deeming application, as you can see the home care administrator deeming, back in the third quarter of last year that are still testing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to keep track of
yes.
their test attempts
right.
because it spans and it can expand an exorbitant amount of time. The provisional is different because that's the capped at 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a little bit different. When I get the test result data, it does not tell me whether they took the class. I have to compare
have to go
the names that I know applied through my office with those who didn't to know, to be able to give you who passed, who failed, how many times. So we're talking, that's an Excel spreadsheet that this girl doesn't have.
Yeah.
So I do have all the test scores. I have the pass fails. And I could, Jennifer at Career Tech could provide me the pass fail rates for instance, the More Norman program, but as far as if they're passing or not passing as deemed provisional, the majority of them who are failing multiple times are not preparedness program individuals. I can say that.
I would just say anecdotally, the majority of the people that I'm crossing my fingers and going, oh, I hope they pass, they're usually people that don't have much experience in the space. You know, they're hospice crossovers or nursing home crossovers or somebody who decided they wanted to start an agency and they enrolled in the class and never worked in the space. So those people have an extraordinarily hard time keeping up with the class.
Bless you.
Other questions? Dana, I can give you?
That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Lindsay. Okay, so Home Services Division, that would be the Home Services Representative.
So if you look at the licensing numbers for companion care services, you'll see that it's increased just a little bit more. I think for the last year and a half, it's stayed at 22, and it's 25. And keep in mind, for all of the agencies, they just kind of, they go up and down as agencies, you know, close and new ones come aboard. But overall, we have 545 agencies, and that is going to be 381 home care agencies and 139 hospices. And then for the state home care licensure deficiencies, the number one is organization, including supervising nurse personnel policies and records, and there were 58 citations. The next one would be compliance with federal, state, and local laws. And, you know, again, federal, state, and local laws is going to be things like the uniform application for AIDS. It could be background checks, just anything that there is a law for but not a specific tag for. And then quality assessment and improvement 16. And also keep in mind for the, you know, for the licensure tags, anytime there is a federal recertification, a state licensure survey is completed also. So that may be in this number. So even though that happens, a 2567 is not generated if everything is captured on the federal side. But if not, it would be included in these numbers. For federal home care deficiencies, it's going to be care planning, coordination, and quality of care, 67 citations. And keep in mind, I'm giving you for the whole condition, so this is everything that's
under that category.
And going forward, that I think one time we tried to do it as tags, we're having a lot of problems with the reports. So the first time I ran the reports, the numbers were real wonky and just downright impossible. So we got with our Keys help desk and they ran something from the back end, and that's how I got the numbers. But when they give the numbers, they give them in tags as opposed to condition. Mm-hmm. So that's why you got them in tag format. But my preference is this way. Skilled Professional Services 42, and that is going to be, that could be the aide, it could be the occupational therapist, it is anything that those skilled professionals are supposed to do. For federal deficiencies for hospice, 68 for IDG, care planning and coordination of services, 18 for hospice aid assignment and duties, and then 14 for completion of the comprehensive assessment. For the state hospice, we've got criminal background check, 4, and then for initial assessment and compliance with federal, state, and local laws, 2 citations. For emergency preparedness for home health, risk assessment plan based on an all-hazards approach, 25 citations, name and contact information, 16, and then testing and training, 24. For emergency preparedness for hospice, we've got emergency EP testing requirements, 4, name and contact information, 3, and plan based on all hazards approach, 1. So you all know that, you know, Lindsay mentioned this also for her area, but we're getting into renewal season, and Roy has gotten a couple of calls saying, well, I haven't gotten my renewal reminder and I need that so I can submit my application.
No, you don't.
So it is time, and the earlier the better. Let's see. So for the home care renewal applications received since 1/1/24, we've received 46. We've processed 20. Six are awaiting information, and 20 still to be processed. For the hospice agencies, we've received 43. We've processed 39. We're awaiting missing information on 3, and we have 1 that's to be processed. And then this last report, I don't see it. I wrote another report that you normally don't get, and I came across it quite by accident. So those of you who have home care agencies, I don't know if this is helpful for you or not, but this is the top 10 admission or submission errors. And records submitted late, patient information mismatch, inconsistent record sequence, duplicate assessment, record timing invalid, inconsistent PM0150 values, inconsistent dates, inconsistent CCN, unauthorized submitter, and no match found. I don't know if that's helpful for any of you or not. If it is, let me know and I will continue, but if not, we'll just scratch it.
I think it might be helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good information.
Yeah. Always is that.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be good to compare this to, you know, what the agency's actually doing. You know.
Yeah.
So that's all I have unless you have questions.
Just a real quick question. When the applications come in and if they're all the information is there, about how long does it take for you to process it?
If you send it in now, lickety split.
Oh, because this is a little bit early.
Yes.
People always wait till the last. I got you.
Don't wait for the rush.
Later is going to be a whole different story.
Rush hour does begin.
Hopefully, so last year it was Rowan and I.
Mm-hmm.
And for it just to be us two, I think we did really good because the licensure applications are not mine.
Mm-hmm.
But Rowan was new, mm-hmm. and you know, and she did great. But I think all in all, we just kicked it on getting them done. If you were somebody who did not get yours until October, you probably didn't think we kicked it. But we had. I mean, there are stacks, and they come in and et cetera. So getting in now, I can't give you a reasonable expectation. Because everything is so dependent, you know, every day is different. Every day has a different fire to put out. Every day has meetings that won't end.
Are they just the two of you working on it?
Last year, it was just Rowan and I. Yes.
And this year,
we.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you all have met Danny. Danny's so now it's Danny and Rowan, and I will help as I can.
Okay,
so it ought to be a little less burdensome.
Well, hopefully, we hope so. But we just can't say it out loud.
Yeah.
What has to jinx it?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean. Next item on the agenda is personal care discussion regarding unlicensed, uncertified personnel, et cetera, and the discussion of House Bill 3371 that has been approved by the governor.
Okay.
So we were waiting last time for that to occur to see what to do.
Not quite.
Okay.
We were waiting on House Bill 20-something or another. 2071, 20, 20, 80,
20, 80.
It could be.
20.
I'm looking for the
Is that because it crossed over a session?
So the 2071 or 2075 or 2078.
2075.
Thank you very much. It didn't advance.
Okay.
It got so far and then it just stalled.
Uh-huh.
And out of nowhere, this one, you know, this one came, and it pretty much did the same thing.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it passed, it was approved by the governor on the 29th of April, and it says all the things that, you know, that you all wanted. In your package, you're going to see, you already saw it, the language.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you sent it out also, so we had a chance to read this.
Yeah.
So this bill, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it removes all the supportive home assistant language that has needed to be removed.
Correct.
For years, because it never was able to be implemented.
Correct.
But it really replaces it with the whole notion of the person in a license-only agency providing care doesn't have to be certified.
Right, and it has the training requirements.
And it has the training requirements, and then the supervision requirements.
But the supervision went down to 6 months. It was
It went down to 3 months. So it was in the original version. I'm just revealing how old I am here. In the original version, that exemption was only for live-in caregivers. And so the live-in was struck and personal care in the home was replaced. So that made it apply to everybody in a licensed-only agency, not Medicare certified. But the old live-in provision was they had to be continuously trained by an RN once a month, which meant a soup visit once a month. Some folks wanted it to go to 6 months. A compromise was 3 months.
Okay. It's a good compromise. Yeah.
And I think it was a good compromise.
That worked for you.
Months. Yeah. Too long. That's my opinion.
Yeah. It was a long time.
So this is law now, and it will be effective in November?
Sure. November 1st.
November 1st. Okay. So
you don't need to take any action on that.
So there's a bleed over with this discussion and the next topic.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that's what Karen was getting at, maybe.
Yes, I was.
So the bleed over being, you know, you guys had voted, not the last meeting, but the previous meeting, November, on removing the
on-site.
So if you wanted to know the process and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we knew the change was, you know, that a change was coming or a change was anticipated. And for me, it's, I would rather, you know, knock out two things at the same time as opposed to one. I did not take into account that me waiting prevented the other from getting done. So we'll do it all, you know, we'll do it all at the same time.
And we're talking about rules at this point.
Because it's law, you know, it will be law, period, no matter what. But we do still want to update, you know, we want to get the, you know, the rule right. We want to get everything in there and everything, all the strike-throughs, we want to make sure that that's out and et cetera. And at the same time, we'll do the on-site, we'll add the on-site for submission to the commissioner.
Okay. And what do we need to do?
What action do we need to take?
So normally this is what you do, okay? And hold on just a minute. So, you know, when there's a rule change, we have to do the, you know, for the board. One of the things what you guys are responsible for, and I don't mean board, I mean the council, responsible for recommending any permanent rule changes to the State Board of Health, and I mean that's the commissioner, give public notice, offer an opportunity for public comment, and conduct a public rulemaking hearing. So that's one of the things that's in statute one of the things that you all have to do. Yeah. So this was such a small change as far as a strike through of on-site. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think in your packet you have the section change and it has the on-site mark through. You see that?
Yeah, on this page right here.
Oh, is this page?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's marked on the second page.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
I'm looking.
Right here. It's on the back.
Yeah, it's on the back page. It's on the back. Okay. Yes, it's so middle. It's like you can't find it.
You remember the last time you did, you know, for the rule change? I think Ryan did one for 661 and then
yes.
he did
yeah.
one. And
exactly.
it's the same concept. So we have to have this.
Okay.
And then we also, so on our part, we do the notice of rulemaking intent and the RAS. We do that and we submit them all together. And then there is that goes to the policy team. And what the policy team does is make sure, you know, they look it over and make sure everything is A-okay. And, you know, the macros and you know, and the regulation are the same. And, you know, so they can advance it. So again, this goes, we're talking about the whole rulemaking process and, you know, how this advances to the commission. So we have to have the section changes, the NIR and the IRS submitted, and then set up public hearing and whatnot. And then after all of that is done, it goes to the commissioner, and then it follows the regular, you know, the regular legislative channels. But also at the same time, before anything happens, it goes to our assistant deputy and deputy, which is Joy and Dr. Frazier. Okay. It goes to them, and at any time they can send it back and you know, with questions, or they need the council to do something differently, or whatever that the case may be. And then after that's done, it will go back to them, and then it goes to, you know, then we meet with the policy team and legal. For a discussion. Mm-hmm. So this is all happening in the background while the NIR and notice rulemaking intent and other things are done. This is happening in the background. Okay. For okays that we can do this. We don't see any problem with this. This is okay.
Okay. That sounds like it takes a long time.
It does. How long does that?
A year.
I mean, does that take?
Year.
How long does that whole process take?
As I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah. That's why.
Seems to take forever.
Yeah.
And so for something like this one right here, just the striker,
for an office,
you know, this takes time. Yeah. But one of the things that we do is we contact our policy person, which is Audrey Talley, and we ask her for the latest version of the 661 or the 662, because it has to be the latest version, because once everything is done and everything goes through the process and they submit it to the Office of Administrative Rules, if the font is not right, if anything is not right, it's a done deal.
Wow.
So, you're talking about the state, and yes, it does take long. And one of the things, as of last year, we had a shorter amount of time to get things done, and this year, I think another 5 weeks was removed. You know, our request is always, if you have something that you need to change, let's get it to the advisory council now. Mm-hmm. Let's get it to the other. Because on something like this, where the legislation, that's once the governor signs it, it is a done deal, and that is. But if you want something removed, you want, you want to initiate rule changing, you know, and whatnot, there is a set time frame, and you have to approve it.
Okay, the council. So this new 3371 being signed and preparing to be law, is it correct to assume that a rule change to take out all the supportive home assistance stuff and to do anything else needs to follow that? Or do we not need to?
So no. You don't have to do anything. From my understanding, you don't have to do anything about that. We just have to make the change.
Uh-huh.
And that is really initiated by the policy team.
Uh-huh.
Who sends something to us. I mean, I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do the changes, but they initiate that.
Okay. So we don't have to come and recommend any. We think you should. Okay.
So really no action on our part today?
Because this is done.
It's already done.
Done. Mm-hmm. That's done.
Okay.
That's
done.
Been done.
But there will be some kind of rule change because of it, and ultimately it will fall to us to say
yes.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things that we've been trying to work on for the last year is for the 662 and the 661, mm-hmm. we've been trying to update the official copy so that all the new changes are in there.
Yeah.
And still haven't been able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we thought we had it done. We thought, and there's a broken link somewhere at the Office of Administrative Records. So just unable to do it.
Mm-hmm.
but I refuse to be defeated. I'm still working on it. Because there have been some significant changes. Uh-huh. And, you know, this is by, you know, paramount for new agencies or new people that are trying to open agencies, and they don't have, you know, they're going by the information that's there.
Mm-hmm. It's out of date. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're working on it. Okay. And just so you all know, if there's something that you know has been changed, you know, you can go to the Oklahoma Secretary of State and you can click on the tab for Office of Administrative Records. And as long as you know the section number, you're able, I mean, that the section, like, organization, you'll be able to find the change.
They have the latest there.
Okay. So really nothing needed for us at this time. Wait for it.
Wait for it, because this is what you want, is to remove that unsigned.
It is.
So,
and so it'll
it
come
at the
with
same
the next.
Time.
Okay, all right.
So we don't even have to make a motion to approve this.
Because we already
because
have.
Because we already did. Yeah. So we're, it's a done deal. Okay.
Yeah. And so, okay, so just glad this law is in effect, and, you know, to your, I was just thinking about what you said before about has the crunch for AIDS been eased any? I just wonder if we'll see.
If it'll make any
speculation, if it'll make any difference to how hard it is to get AIDS.
I don't know if you all realize it, and I'm sure you do. Everybody's short. We are short as heck. We're probably shorter than we have ever, ever been. And talking with CMS on a regular basis, and we have a biweekly meeting with everyone in our region, New Mexico and Arkansas and Louisiana, and they're having the same problem. And we had a CMS conference in Baltimore week before last, and they're, you know,
everybody
they're short too.
And this is from, you know, people from all over, be it Florida, be it Chicago, be it, everyone's having the same problem.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The industry's under crunch.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Everywhere.
All right, so no action there. And then we are down to item number 6, process for bill approval after advisory council recommendation. For rule change, on-site, and Title 63 update to replace Board of Health with Commissioner. Is so there anything?
Yeah. The only thing that I didn't mention there is, let's see. I think Jan, you asked me about this last time, and I think that might be in your language also. Or maybe we accidentally removed it. So in 2019, there was a change made to, thank you very much. In 2019, there was a change made to Title 63 that reads as follows, effective January 14th, 2019, all duties and powers of the board shall be transferred to the commissioner. Any provision in statute that provides to the board authority that is not advisory nature shall be deemed to grant the duty or power to the commissioner. So I just wanted to share that it has been changed, it has been updated, but I think just like everything else, you may have to go to the administrative rules to get that.
To get that, okay. So in practical reality, that means the Board of Health no longer is the authority, but a single individual, the Commissioner of Health. Okay. Does that matter to us at all?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think
not
so.
Really.
It's not going to affect us.
No. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, John. So now we have a discussion and possible action in the form of a vote regarding 310662-3-4E6TB test.
Tuberculosis testing.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So someone asked for this as an agenda item, and I don't know what it is that, I don't know what change is being requested.
Well, we had some agencies ask us to put it on there about the frequency of the testing. So I know there's some guidelines that say 2 years, there's some that says 4 years, and then some that are at 1 year. So
we just need to know which
some are doing testing on hire only and the questionnaire after that. So
that's what I mean, what I read, it says that you test them when you hire them. And then it's screening. Every 4 years afterwards. Is some of the newer guidelines.
This is the language, and if you remember a few years back, it changed because it wasn't a yearly thing, mm-hmm. and it changed to the 2019 CDC requirements. And as an agency, you can make it more stringent, but you cannot make it less stringent.
Yeah.
Right.
And this was a big change when they made the change. I do remember with the policy team and legal and quite a few of the other organizations and the county offices and whatnot, because this was not just a change for home care, it was a change for hospitals,
right.
It was a change for
right.
every provider type. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, you know what, this is my opinion, and it could be wrong, but it seems like the problem is probably one of education out there, people not understanding what they have to do. And this language, this is not currently in Chapter 662 as published on your website,
not
right?
on ours.
But it's on the...
I don't know if you remember, you know, during COVID when we were doing the weekly conversations and whatnot, I sent this to everybody because it was a question that was frequently asked.
Yes.
So I have sent this to everybody,
right.
And I think every week I get at least one inquiry. And I think it would be helpful, of course, if somebody was on our website and they went to the rules, if they could find it immediately, it would be, you know, most helpful. But I do send it whenever somebody asks. I do a cut and paste and send it to them.
Okay. So I think that's just where some education needs to be done with people. And we had a Home Care Association board meeting the other day, and I would say there was not any clarity amongst anybody about what we were really supposed to do.
So, you know, initial on hire, there is a TB test, period. There is for every initial hire.
Uh-huh.
And then thereafter is annual screening. Annual screening unless someone is symptomatic or...
Right. There's some reason to. So on hire and then annual screening. The test on hire and annual screening. And then the second question that followed from that, is that a one-step test or a two-step test on hire?
So that is going to be, you know, I am always going to point you to the CDC.
CDC says,
but that is not my decision.
Okay.
That is an agency decision.
And that's not, so the CDC isn't saying it has to be one way or another. Okay.
It does, and I'm looking at it. Annual TB screening no longer routinely performed for most healthcare professionals unless at risk or ongoing exposure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when you do that just assessment thing. Right. So it sounds like it'd be really helpful if your website had an easy access to TB testing. You might reduce the number of questions that come
right.
into you.
What you really got to do.
In layman's language.
All tests at hire and screen thereafter.
I can tell you what we're always going to do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What we're always going to do is we're going to give the information
mm-hmm.
just as it's,
and you're not
because
then you
got to
figure it out
for the agency.
Yeah.
And there is enough, you know, there's some people that say there's a lot of gray in regulation. There's other people that says it's strictly black and white. There is enough gray for every agency to make this work and cater to their own
right.
you know,
discretion.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the staff that have the proven TB, is there a time frame on how often they have to have a negative chest x-ray?
So I am going to tell you again, go to the CDC website, because mm-hmm. I think they just say, I think they said 5 years or something that previously said 5 years, but it does not spell that out.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that you want to capture in your policy.
In your policy.
Okay.
Figure
mm-hmm.
it out yourself.
That's what you have to conquer that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I think there's something else that would be helpful, because you go to something to try to get an answer, and it says go to this place, and they'll say go to this place.
Yeah.
So to say, you know, refer to the CDC, and then you can say the language of the CDC.
Yeah.
You know, just to
mm-hmm.
save them from one more
mm-hmm. yeah.
run around.
Yeah.
Right. Might be helpful on the website.
Yeah.
any of that infection stuff, CDC, follow CDC guidelines, you can't go wrong.
And then you hunt around and try to find the guidelines.
Well, actually, this is really good clarity.
It is, yeah.
Because I think it is people too. Going, well, on the website it still says wrong. Well, then you have to go through the whole discussion of the website isn't, you know.
I can't fix it.
I know.
It is embarrassing. It is very, very embarrassing to me. I can't fix it. I have tried.
Oh, gosh.
You know, but again, I refuse to take no for an answer. So I am kind of working. I am trying.
Well,
we'll celebrate with you the day that you
anything you can make
there.
It black and white for them. I mean, you can't do it all, but the more compliance you're going to have.
But we can share from our ends.
Yeah.
Each of our ends we can share.
Yeah, and just like this, anything else in regulation that seems rather gray, and again, the gray is there for a reason. It is to design your program.
Give you some flexibility in your program.
It does.
Correct, absolutely.
As long as you define your own policy.
as long as you have a policy.
Your own policy.
Your policy can't be looser than...
Right, exactly.
But if your policy is more stringent, the surveyors are going to hold you to your policy.
Exactly.
You can't come back and say, oh, yeah, but regulation says it's like, yeah, but your policy...
Yeah, but your policy says...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's the...
That's the key. That's the key.
It's not making it worse.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Very helpful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So... I would say we've got it as a possible action. Does anybody see any action they feel necessary here?
Just to go back and educate.
Yeah.
Educate and tomorrow.
We have to vote on that.
Yeah. And I don't know if action includes, you know, a little more language from the CDC or, you know, I guess that's...
So, I have noted this, and I'll see what we can do on our end, but as far as action, we just want to put that someone wanted I think the request was a vote, and anytime we want to make sure that we have that language there to give you the opportunity to vote if you need to.
Okay. Does anybody see the need to vote?
No, I think the clarification and training is all
we
need.
Yeah, really,
I think that was key.
This is very helpful to us.
Thank you for writing that up.
Oh, stuff on the back. Okay, so there being no action there, we'll move on to item number 8. That's the future meeting dates, August 14th and November 13th. Mm-hmm. No vote necessary there.
The 14th will be in the auditorium.
Oh, okay.
The 14th August. Of August in the auditorium.
Yeah. You'll remind us of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. You know, Dawn, you were saying, I apologize for the auditorium, but my comment was, I don't mind the auditorium.
No, I don't either.
It's actually easier to get to than here.
It's just if you're at the end, you can't hear, so we might set it more, you know, if you're sitting at the very end, I couldn't hear very good, maybe I'm getting old, so I just need to set more like that if I'm at the end.
I'm having the same problem.
Yeah.
Speak up.
Everybody has to talk.
Especially when everybody else is talking.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want anybody to fall. Not probably. I am clumsy.
Which someone might break into song and dance.
I would hate to miss that opportunity to watch that, to observe that.
Okay. We are at public comment. Hearing none, we're at adjournment. In 1 hour.
That's amazing. Wow, they knew that Lola and I had to leave, right?
And we don't need to take a vote to adjourn, do we? All right.
Okay. Awesome.
Thank you all.
So, thank you. We objected.
Yeah, exactly.
So we voted on this election.